From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of November 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, Canada is making it tough for BHP to purchase Potash Corporation. Russia's move to stop the purchase of frozen U.S. chicken is causing some worries. And the CFTC maintains it is trying to fix the convergence problems in the soft red winter wheat contracts traded in Chicago at the CME Group. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And at the end of this half-hour program, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way, we'll hear from Daryl Good and his perception of what the price of corn might need to do in the space between now and the end of the year. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures were higher, sharply higher in the wheat, up 23.5 at 7.13¾. March at 7.53½, up 24. July at 7.87, up 22¼. Kansas hard red December contract at $7.69, up 22½¢. December corn futures $5.90, up 9. The March at 6.03¾, up 9¼. May 6.10, up 9¢. And July at 6.13½, up 9¼. December of next year at $5.54½. Up 5¢ for the day. November beans at 12.64¾, up 37¼. January at 12.74¾, up 37¼. And the March at 12.83¼, up 38½¢. July soybeans, $12.90¾, up 39¾. And next year's November at 12.15½, 29¢ higher. December bean meal, 3.48¢, up 9.30. December soybean oil at 51.25, up $1.35. Nearby December live cattle futures down a nickel at 97.65. The Feb's at 101.47½, were 30¢ higher. November feeders at 110.12½, 75 lower. January futures down a buck at 110.40. December lean hogs today at $67.62½, up 85¢. February's at $73.80. up $1.25 for 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby contract in the December crude oil futures, $86.55, up $1.86 a barrel. Ethanol trading at $2.34¢ is 3½¢ higher. Natural gas at $3.85¢, up 2½¢. Heating oil or diesel fuel up 4⁄6¢ a gallon at $2.37½. And the gold futures at $1,382.70 settled $45.60 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 188 points higher at 11,402. And the U.S. dollar now trading at 75.88 is down 0.59. The CRB index at 312.30 is up 7.23 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service on this Thursday afternoon. They say mostly cloudy skies, a high of 50 degrees. It'll be breezy and north-northwest winds around 22 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 30 this afternoon. Mostly cloudy this evening, a low of 30. North-northwest winds between 15 and 18 in Urbana-Champaign, gusting to 24. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, the high near 42, north-northwest winds at 13 to 16 miles an hour. They'll gust up to 23, and then Friday night, mostly clear, a low of 23 degrees. Winds will settle back, but still blowing at 7 to 9 miles an hour. Saturday should be sunny, a high of 49. Saturday night, mostly clear, a low of 31. Sunday, sunny, a high of 58 degrees. By the time we get to Sunday night, mostly clear skies, a low of 39 degrees. The extended forecast says the start to the work week on Monday will be sunny with a high of 63 degrees. Monday night clear and low of 42. Tuesday sunny. The high 64. Tuesday night partly cloudy and a low of 44 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois, is on the phone line with us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, what a day in Chicago after a change in Washington, D.C., and then the announcements from the Fed. All kinds of things are happening, and the dollar's moving lower, but the commodity markets were moving higher.
Well, the main focus here, I think, is the Fed's decision to basically do quantitative easing to the purchase of another $600 billion of government securities. I mean, that's a deliberate attempt to devalue the currency. And when you devalue the currency, especially when the United States dollar is the reserve currency in the world, it's going to take more of those dollars than to buy commodities, whether it's corn, soybeans, crude oil, lumber, steel, aluminum, copper, gold, whatever that may be the case. And that is why we see nothing but green clear across the board on commodities. You know, you can see gold up $40, $45, $46 here, and the ags are all very, very strong in here.
Let's concentrate on the dollar just a bit. where do we go from here with it? It's at 75.9 at the moment.
Well, who knows for sure, but the thing that I noticed right away here this morning is that we are in the new lows for the year. We punched through the low that we had here a month ago that did bounce off of a long-term uptrend line drawn off of the 08-09 lows. And now, since we have broken below that trend line, I think the door now is open for a solid test of the lows that we had back in 08, which are down around this 70-70 and 71-30 area. And, of course, you know, when we were back at those levels in 08, that is when we had $8 corn, $16 beans, $145 oil, and it just goes on and on. So if the dollar is going to go back into those levels that we saw in 08, then you would maybe correlate that to thinking that maybe commodities are going to go back into those levels that they visited in 08.
Let's start with the crude oil, because the transportation costs drove much in that 08 period, I think. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. Do you think it can, if the dollar were to move back to those levels, do you think that crude oil prices would actually climb so high?
We're probably not quite as strong in the economic picture to maybe see it go back to $140, $150. Haven't quite broken out into new highs for the year yet on crude oil. If we get a strong day tomorrow, then we would be the lead high so far this year was back in, I think, March or April, and it was around 87.15. But I think you'd probably be surprised. Now, one thing we got to keep in mind, the dollar's not at those levels yet, but if the dollar would go down into those levels, that is going to rise commodity prices higher based in dollar terms. You got to understand that it's in dollar terms, and if we are going through a deliberate currency devaluation, then it's going to take more dollars to buy the same amount of quantity, whether it be a barrel of oil or a bushel of corn or, you know, a ton of steel. So what we're doing here is printing money and spreading money all over the world, and we're going to, you know, that reflects in higher commodity prices.
We know that the government is, and the Fed this in this case, is planning to do this at least with, what, the $650 or $600 billion over?
As additional. They've already got a trillion or two, probably.
Well, and there's another 250 or something like that that's in the turnover, so another extra 850 or 900 or whatever it is. But that first part over an eight-month period and then maybe over a year and a half, kind of that total 850, does that make much difference to you in the way you look at the marketplace and think about where prices are headed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the dollar, as far as I'm concerned, the currency, worldwide currency values are the main increment determining what kind of business is going to happen around the world, where the business is going to go, because we are in a world market, global market, and that has a definite impact on prices of commodities and where demand goes to find those commodities, where supply is increased to meet that demand. So you have to now the dollar index by itself, you may want to be a little cautious because it's heavily weighted toward the European currency, the euro, and it doesn't necessarily reflect a lot of the trade currency exchange rates in other major parts of the consuming world too.
Do you think that this would be enough impetus to push China to import corn from either the U.S. or Argentina or someplace?
Well, I think there's a general consensus in the trade that the demand that China has for commodities, ag commodities, is pretty great, and there is a pretty good expectation in the trade that you're going to see China be a buyer of U.S. corn. USDA has them buying 1 million tons, at least on the balance sheets, but I think you visit around the trade, the world, you're going to find out there's probably a larger appetite than that, but that may not come at us until we get into the spring months.
Well, and I guess my thought was that, of course, that if the dollar is lower, it usually means it's cheaper for countries like China to purchase U.S.
Well, China pegs their currency to the dollar, so that doesn't necessarily will impact U.S. Exchange rates, basically, with China.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about ethanol production. It's running ahead, I think, for the first 2 months of the year by about 18% over last year.
Well, profitability in ethanol is very strong, at least in the near term. I mean, and that is why you are seeing a very steady grind, a very strong demand for cash corn by the ethanol industry, because they can grind the corn, they can get their alcohol, and they can sell it into the marketplace, that is very profitable. Unfortunately, though, they can't lock that profit in. It is all a spot profit. It gets a little scary maybe down the road at some point in time. All of a sudden, that profit's not going to be there. But at least in the short run, in the near term, they can grind and they can make profit. And so there is no cutback, basically, in the ethanol industry, at least at the moment.
And then turn your attention, look forward to next week. USDA's crop production report for the month of November due out. Will they change anything?
Well, I think there's room for some tweaking, I would say, because they do have a little more information than what they had in October, but I don't think they have any major changes to make, because to my understanding, they had a very high percentage of their test plots already harvested for the October report, so they had they've got a little bit more information. So I think there's more of a tweaking process than any big changes in yield production, and the general trade feels that there's probably room for corn to come down one or two, and there's room for beans to go higher. Most of the chatter is a half a bushel or more, but we do know here in the Eastern Corn Belt we had some awful strong yields.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. You can listen to Dan again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org, or you can call this number, 217-333-3434. We update it with either the opening or the closing numbers and a bit of analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 daily.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tim Wells in Moline at 309-797-7369. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Now here's Dave with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, hedge fund analysts say that Canada's blocking of BHP's $39 billion bid for Potash Corporation leaves little room for a modified offer, throwing the spotlight on how the world's largest miner can find new avenues for growth. Yesterday, Canada said the deal would not benefit the country. While Canada gave BHP 30 days to come up with additional proposals that might make its hostile bid for the world's largest fertilizer producer more acceptable, the chances of a successful modified offer appear remote. The U.S. chicken industry, which in September resumed shipping meat to Russia, has contacted the U.S. Embassy in Moscow in an attempt to learn if Russia intends to stop such imports beginning on January 1st. The head of Russia's Consumer Protection Watchdog on Wednesday said the country will ban sales and processing of deep frozen poultry meat from January 1st, both domestic and imported, because freezing hurts the quality of the meat. Russia at one time was the largest export market for U.S. chicken, especially chicken leg quarters, but it has been buying less as it builds its own production capacity. Commodity Futures Trading Commission head Gary Gensler says the regulatory agency remains determined to solve the convergence issues in U.S. wheat markets, but changing position limits on speculative funds is not on the front burner. For more than 2 years, the CME Group has been tinkering with its soft red winter wheat contract to tighten the spread between futures and cash prices at expiration. CME's latest attempt to improve convergence is a variable storage rate plan, but so far it has not worked, and grain hedgers continue to avoid the market, though speculators have thrived. The Kansas City Board of Trade, home of hard red winter wheat futures, has in recent months now also seen their cash futures spread widened, with cash prices falling by as much as $1.95 a bushel below futures this summer. A study from the American Veterinary Medical Association says the number of veterinarians who work with cows, pigs, chickens, and other farm animals is on the decline as many prepare to retire and fewer students opt for large animal practices. The study found that only 2% of veterinary school students in the 2010 graduating class said they planned to work mostly with large non-pet animals. From 1998 to 2009, the number of small animal vets climbed to 47,118 from 30,255, while the number of farm animal vets dropped to 5,040 from 5,553. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Please do visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, up next, the ag economists at the University of Illinois have been working on the S&D tables, that's supply and demand, to try and figure out if the price of corn needs to go much higher to limit its use. I'll have more with Daryl Good. The quick and dirty bottom line on the price of corn relates directly to ethanol and how fast plants are making corn into the biofuel. If the current pace were to be maintained, there simply would not be enough corn around to make it through the whole year, says ag economist Darrell Good. He's at the University of Illinois. He expects the pace to slow. It's just a matter of when and what effect the consumption, which is now running 18% ahead of last year for the first 2 months of the marketing year, will have on the price of corn.
We are pushing a lot of corn into the ethanol market right now. It's a pace that cannot be maintained. We don't expect it to be, but we don't have enough corn to meet that kind of demand. So if it does continue for several more weeks, then the market's going to have to say, we're going to have to cut you somewhere. We're going to have to slow somebody down. If not the ethanol users, then we will have to slow feed use. And that suggests higher corn prices at some point. So we need to monitor that on a current basis and continue to ask the question, too fast or too slow in terms of consumption?
If it's too fast, then the price of corn will go higher until some end user decides to stop buying. Darrell Good says it's not really clear which demand base might cry uncle first, livestock, exports, or ethanol.
There's not a definitive answer to that because in the ethanol market, it depends a bit on what happens to gasoline prices and ethanol prices relative to gasoline. If the economics of blending remain favorable, even with higher corn prices, then blenders are going to continue to demand the ethanol and it'll continue to get produced. If ethanol prices would happen to increase or energy prices in general decline overall, then that takes away some of the economic benefits of blending. We'll also be watching the blender's tax credit that expires at the end of December, whether that's renewed or if it is, at what level. So the ethanol market is a lot more complicated, I think, than the other markets because you've got more moving parts there.
So the ethanol blenders could be producing at a breakneck speed in order to avoid a series of economic pitfalls that are already on a timeline in the future, like the expiring 45 cents per gallon blender's tax credit. It means corn used for ethanol production could drop back dramatically overnight. It's not the only place where corn consumption could contract.
Traditionally, when we've gotten into a shortage of corn, the sector that has cut is the livestock sector, that we start seeing a decrease in feed demand as numbers of livestock begin to dwindle a little bit as feeding weights come down somewhat. So that's the most logical area in the short run if we need to tighten up consumption.
It all means there isn't a lot of downside risk in the price of corn, at least for the time being, says Darrell Good. Still, as always, there are dates in the calendar to watch. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. In just 2 minutes, I'll return when we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's National Candy Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Benjamin Goodrich was born. An American industrialist, he founded Goodrich Two & Company in Akron, Ohio in 1870. A decade later, the company became known by its more familiar name, B.F. Goodrich. The company was known for a number of innovations, including adding carbon to the rubber to improve tire wear, and the invention of the first synthetic rubber tires in 1937. Also in 1841, the first wagon train arrived in California. In 1873, Anthony Iski was issued a patent for a meat slicing machine. It worked much like a mandolin, with a frame to hold the meat while sliding it against the blade. In 1879, James and John Riddy invented the first cash register. They came up with the idea to prevent bartenders from stealing at the Pony House restaurant in Dayton, Ohio. The first model looked like a clock, but instead of the hands indicating hours and minutes, they indicated dollars and cents. Also in 1879, inventor Thomas Elkins received a patent for a refrigerating machine which could be used to cool food. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is on the phone line with us on short notice as our regular Thursday analyst, Pete Leavitt, is out of the office this afternoon. Thanks so much for filling in, Josh. Do appreciate that. Let's start with the weather forecast for our part of the world here in the Midwest. What can we expect for the Corn Belt?
Yeah, well, actually, it's a period of cooler temperatures here for over the next couple days, and highs tomorrow will be the coolest day yet of the autumn, with many portions of the Midwest not seeing temperatures getting out of the 40s tomorrow afternoon. Sunny, clear, breezy with winds out of the north-northwest as we have a front right now crossing through the Midwest, but cool and dry, and really this front as it's moved through has been a dry frontal passage, so it's a wind shift, it's certainly a temperature change and a humidity change, but no real precip associated with it. This cool down, so to speak, will last about 48 hours. It's here today and gone tomorrow, so to speak, and then we moderate significantly for this time of year as we get late into the weekend, early next week. Temperatures getting back up into the upper 60s and 70s across the southern half of the belt. Even actually up here in Chicago, we could see 70 degrees next Tuesday, Wednesday, which would be kissing up against records for this time of year. So quick cool down. Then we warm up next week, and the main reason why we are warming up so much is a storm system that develops. Oh, it starts to kick out of the Rockies on Tuesday of next week. It looks to be one of these very slow-moving storm systems and really sits across the plains, moves northward with time, not east, and so that puts us in strong southwesterly flow and hence the warm-up. When's the next time we get rain would be a good question. And the further west you go in the belt, out towards western Iowa, Nebraska, you look like you do get into the rain showers in the middle of next week. Here in the central and eastern belt, Illinois, Indiana, it looks like maybe at the end of the week we get some rain showers next week, and then the next opportunity is in the middle of the week of the 15th. So as we've seen much of the autumn, Todd, here, it's a drier than normal pattern.
Do the hard red winter wheat growing regions in Kansas and that area pick up any rainfall there?
That's dry. Yeah, they've had a very, very dry autumn here to date. And this is one of those storm systems that it's going to be a different story from Kansas south versus Nebraska, the northeastern Colorado acreage. Looks like you get rains in the north, but southern two-thirds of Kansas, southeastern Colorado, down through the panhandles, no rain to speak of on this event. So the dryness issues continue, and to that regard intensify because of the strong southwesterly flow. You just continue to have a very dry pattern.
Take me to South America. Talk about Argentina and Brazil.
Yeah, the probably the biggest highlight in that sector here today and has been here recently is that the northern and eastern acreage in Argentina as well as into Uruguay has been running well below normal rainfall over the past 30 days, less than 50% of normal. And rainfall, some opportunities over the next 2 weeks, but it's only minor coverage, 40% of the acreage receiving, 3/10 with some isolated amounts up over an inch. So by and large, the dryness issues are going to continue as we move into mid-November across that acreage. Further north, southern Brazil, it's a rainier pattern. Then northern Brazil has been seasonal here for the past 30 days. So really the focus in South America, northern and eastern sections of Argentina moving into Uruguay.
Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks really for him filling in this afternoon for Peter Leavitt, who's away. And thank you for being with us. This has been the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.